Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to part two, Living Equity. This is the second quarter 2022 equity overview and Rambus Chartology. In our introduction, we went over the charts for the year to date and the Rambus Chartology very quickly because everything is going down. And the big question is it a bear or a major correction? We don't know which it is, but it ain't over. So expect more down, is what I think. Our topic for the theme is building family wealth. And the key message is it's not just an investment strategy, it's a war strategy. How you use your time and resources in a war environment is a very different planning process for both personal planning and financial planning. And I wanted to walk you through our sort of our key points on this. And again, let me just show you again the so in the intro we had the introduction, and then in the sort of introductory audio video, then we did our part one on risk management. And again, I want to emphasize, it doesn't matter what a great job you do on living equity or financial equity, if you don't get the risk management right, you're not going to make it. So again, it's war strategy. Risk management is where you got to start. You want to be excellent at risk management because, among other things, whatever living equity and financial equity we build, we want to keep it. One of my favorite memes, I just saw this really cute meme of a little girl on doing graffiti, and someone had written the Great Reset, and she crossed out reset and wrote resist, and then drew a picture of Klaus Schwab, and it said, "It's 2030, you own nobody, and you're not happy." Anyway, so we want to make sure you keep your living equity and your financial equity and don't let them roll out the back door. So risk management primary. So please make sure you listen to the introduction and to the part one risk management. Today, we're going to talk about living equity. So this is part two, living equity. Let me just turn to living equity. So I want to talk about six different areas, and I'll start with spiritual grounding. Faith, hope, and love, one of my favorite sermons is about the scripture from Corinthians, and now abideth faith, hope, and love. And he talks about in the sermon the word abideth and the importance of protecting your faith, your hope, and your love at all costs. I keep using the quote also from that sermon about my elevator only goes to the first floor. So if you're going to the basement, you got to get off and take the stairs. It's one of my expressions on why you want to be really picky about who you associate with. I put into the script a series of links to give you some of our offerings where we talk a lot about spiritual grounding and how spiritual intelligence and spiritual matters work. I will tell you, to me, I think there's nothing more important for success in this environment as having a rich and powerful spiritual intelligence and access to spiritual intelligence that can really help you and keep you grounded. And it's extremely difficult to do. I'm always trying to improve every day on this. I would say my room for improvement is absolutely enormous. But I found in working through the most stressful periods of my life, dealing with the evil that is upon us, when you are fisticuffing with evil, when you're dealing with evil, when you're trying to duck and avoid evil, you really need powerful spiritual grounding to, among other things, protect your heart, because it's very hard to stay loving when somebody's trying to kill you. And I know you have to stay in your state of amusement. So I hope these links will help you. And again, everybody's unique, so you have to find your way of doing this. But I think looking at the world spiritually and looking at what we're dealing with as spiritual warfare can help enormously. When I was in the litigation, we used to always pray for our enemies. And I cannot tell you how much it helped. Among other things, it helped to understand them and what they were up to. My attorneys used to think I had a mole at the Department of Justice, and I never could quite tell them, no, no, I can see what they're reading on the website. And then I have this great prayer group. So I know. Anyway, so spiritual grounding, number one. Cultural health. The person who really got me understanding the power of culture is Dr. Joseph Farrell. You know, he was insistent starting about 10 years ago, we can't save the country, but we can save the culture. And he's done a lot to get me to really embrace in my life and in the Soleri website a real investment in taking our culture into a higher mind, whether it's with food for the soul or some of the offerings we make in the cultural area, or making sure people have access to great classical music, on and on and on. So I'm always quoting a dear friend who said that culture is the integration of the divine in everyday life. And I believe that. It can also be the integration of the demonic in everyday life. And if you look at Bizarro World, that's in fact what, you know, what some of the media is trying to do, is to introduce the demonic into everyday life. And I completely reject that. So one of the books that I love to help me do that, in addition to all the scriptural reading or sermons that I listen to, is Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. One of the cabinet secretaries in the Trump administration was said to carry it with him everywhere. And I thought, oh, is this another Catcher in the Rye mind control book? So I got it and read it and fell completely in love with it. It's a remarkable book to help you focus your efforts on constantly improving your own character and helping you be a better person and help you live a richer and more fulfilling life. So truly helpful in terms of having a free and inspired life. I think part of real cultural health is having a positive vision for your life and a positive vision of how things can work out, and having a mentality of abundance. I'll never forget, after 11 years and $6 million of expenditures on the litigation, I had one relative tell me, well, you'll always be poor. And I said, no, I'm going to start another company. I'll be very successful. And she said, no, no, you're going to be poor. That's it. It's over. Your life is ruined. I said, no, 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 not at all. I've learned a tremendous amount. And now I'm going to go back to work and build a new company to help people navigate all of this. And it will be very successful. She got very upset. It happened several times. People were adamant, your life is, you've been destroyed and it's over. I was like, no, no, you don't understand. I got quite an education. Now I'm going to be very successful. And it was funny to see how committed they were to my failure. Anyway, so some of them, I had to, you know, I had to move out of my life because I realized, you know, they were with me for the down, but they weren't as interested in living with me for the up. Anyway, but I think it's very important. Sophia Smallstrom does a lot of good work on this topic of how to envision where you want to go and then be attracted into it. You have to be attracted into the vision of where you want to go. I just think it's a great navigating tool. But and I've always by nature been exceptionally optimistic. I will say this, we're dealing with so much evil, and in the job I deal with so much evil that sometimes it's hard to kind of maintain your state of amusement. But if there is anything you can do to really help you with your cultural health, is give yourself permission to stay amused, no matter, you know, how many people are being killed or dying or some of the terribly evil things you're watching in the world. You gotta keep your state of amusement. You know, it's what scripture says, guard your heart. One of the hardest things that I struggle with dealing with evil is maintaining good habits. And there's a lot of improvement. You know, I do pretty good for somebody who's sort of managed what I've managed, but I could be much better. I put in two links to two of the book reviews we've written on books about habits. And good habits can, and a good mental attitude and good habits are really the difference between failure and success. Another one is never quitting. I have a very famous commentary called Turtle Forth. And whenever things are terrible and something terrible has happened and somebody says, what are we going to do? I say, we're going to turtle. We're just going to move forward. It's amazing what happens if you refuse to quit. You just refuse to quit and you move forward. And part of it is in a world where things are changing and we're having to spend most of our time doing things that are outside of our comfort zone. You know, it helps to just have a habit of always moving forward. It's a rhymes with turtle, but always moving forward. And anyway, so check out Turtle Forth. It's a good one. Another one is good manners. One of the things that I learned from being an investment advisor, working with many, many families over many, many years, is if you marry a kind and thoughtful person who has good manners, you're probably going to have a happy marriage. If you marry a meanie, it's not going to work. So it's, I can't tell you how good manners are for your health. We had a great interview with a great grandson of Emily Post, who has written three of my etiquette books. And it's on the importance of good manners. And it's hard to keep good manners in this environment. Again, I fail all the time. But anything you can do to help yourself and those around you maintain good manners and that state of amusement, it helps. Okay. If you want to build family wealth, you need good relationships. And the most important is a successful marriage. You know, I put that under culture. I could put it in other, you know, we could even make a category for families. But it is exceptionally important that you marry somebody who you are in alignment with in terms of your deepest values and can stay in alignment. There's nothing more tragic than the stories of the divorces and separations during COVID, where one spouse is sneaking off and getting the kids vaccinated without the other spouse's permission. And the next thing you know, you've got a divorce and everybody's getting ripped to shreds financially and emotionally. So one of my favorite books on the topic of marriage is a book called The Good Marriage. I put a link in the script. The author basically said, I wanted to figure out what makes for a good marriage. And what she, the way she came out was she said, there are three models of how you organize power and money in a relationship. And she said, what's important is you agree on the model, which model you're going to use. All three models work as long as you agree on the model. So I used to belong to a church that had a really long, intense course. They wouldn't marry you unless you'd taken the course. And it walked you through all the power and money and big value issues. And it was a serious investment of people's time, but it was a great thing to do because it really forced you to focus on what is a marriage, how does it work, and how can I be a really successful wife, husband, father, mother, daughter-in-law, son-in-law. And a lot of the sermonizing in the church was around those topics of constantly helping marriages and families succeed. So I put in the links a link to one of the most terrifying videos I've ever watched. It's a documentary called Divorce Corps, and it's about the industry, the racketeering industry in the United States of preying legally on marriages that want to get a divorce. It's one of the most frightening thing I've ever seen. And before you get married, or if you're married as part of your planning process, I suggest you watch it. And you need to know that if for some reason you do decide to get divorced, there is a whole industry waiting to pick you apart and make a fortune and strip you of your assets. So, and one reason I would absolutely stress the importance of planning as a family is to make sure you are successful as a family and as a couple and not let that happen. I've been divorced twice. I learned a lot from the process, but if I had known what I know now, I think I could have, and practiced what I know now, I think I could have made much more intelligent choices for me. One of the books that I linked to in the script is a book called, it's an interview, and also there's a book and book review, Family Wealth, Keeping the Family with Jay Hughes. I cannot recommend that book highly enough. I had a wonderful uncle, my favorite uncle, who hated it. He said, "You're turning a family into a corporation." I said, "No, we're just planning to help each other succeed." It was written by an attorney. He and his father had very successful practice at helping extremely wealthy families manage their money and make sure that the generations didn't dilute the fortune, but continued to add to the... It's all about how to keep your wealth. Interestingly enough, if you look at all the tactics they suggest for a family to keep their wealth, those are the tactics you want to use to build wealth. So even if you have no wealth, I find it extremely useful. And it really talks about how a family can start conspiring collectively and individually to help each other succeed. Not succeed in making money, succeed in whatever your dream is to succeed at. Usually in a family, there's a small number who are good at making money and interested in building financial wealth. But there are a lot of people who are interested in other things and interest. If you look at the whole family is successful in a community because they bring multiple gifts, not just money making or not just business. And so it's really about the whole family living their passion and building their dream. Anyway, it's one I recommend to you. And I think, I didn't put this in the script, but it's another one I could. Rich Dad, Poor Dad is one of my favorite books on building wealth. And it's because it teaches you the mindset, the cultural mindset, the cultural habits of what creates wealth. And that's another one. But I think you want to have a culture and a personal culture and associate with people in a personal culture that have those wealth building habits and mentalities, even if it's you're not trying to build financial wealth, you're just trying to build stronger, greater, more excellent people and associate with stronger, greater, more excellent people. So anyway, but there is a real mindset and real time investment and habits to a wealth building culture. So you want to have one. Let's turn to health. Health is something we spend a lot of time on the Solari Report. I talked about it in risk mitigation because this is your greatest danger of destroying yourself financially is by allowing yourself to be poisoned, allowing yourself to lose your health as a result of the sort of different stresses and environmental poisons. Don't let that happen. We have a great health series. We had a wellness series. They're all there. I put some links on how to, you know, some of the planning tools for health. I won't repeat it here, including the COVID-19 forms. If you haven't discovered the COVID-19 forms, they're very, very helpful. It's the Family Financial Disclosure Form, which we just updated, is a way of working with people in your family who want to get a COVID-19 injection and putting into place the provision and the plans and the insurance necessary. So if they do have an adverse vaccine event or adverse event or a death, that it doesn't bankrupt the family. So that a healthcare tragedy does not bankrupt the family. So a lot of the resources linked here are things that can help you deal with some of the dangers of navigating the current health system. But I would check out food.solari.com, the food series, wellness.solari.com, the wellness series, and health.solari.com. We have a tremendous amount, and there's always more we want to do. And of course, we have critical allies in Weston Price and Children Health Defense and Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, who do an absolutely outstanding job on all of these topics. And our beat is not so much health as really making sure that you manage your health in a way that doesn't destroy your, wipe out your finances, let alone your life. So the one thing you do need to know is that investing, when you look at your time budget, you need to make a significant investment in learning how to be your own doctor and your own nurse, but also to find doctors and nurses who you can really trust and sources of expertise in this area that you can really trust. So put a significant investment into your time budget about getting excellent at managing your own health and governing your own health. Okay, education. We talked a lot about building a good intelligence network, and education is part of that, but it's a bigger investment. I put a link to a little curriculum I made for my pastor at one point called Economics 101, which was how to build financial and economics literacy. It was targeted for a high school class, but you know, it can apply for anybody. I do think building significant skills and knowledge with education is a great investment, but you want to make sure you don't make a couple mistakes. One is you want to have as many practical skills as possible. You may not do your own plumbing, but you want to be able to oversee and be literate when you talk to the plumber. You know, I never thought when I, you know, if I had to do it all over again, I would take lots of courses on systems administration because, you know, anybody who goes into a business to say ultimately finds themselves in the IT business just for their back office. So you want to build lots and lots of practical skills. Think of yourself as having a toolkit, and you just want to keep putting tools in the toolkit. And so if you're going to take the time to do a serious education or coursework, you want to think, what are the tools that can save me money or make me powerful or give me the ability to govern, you know, to hire and fire people in all these different areas, from auto mechanics to electricity to plumbing to landscaping to anything else. So you want a basic literacy in many, many things you touch in your life. Big issue is if you're dealing with education for your kids. You know, we've reached the point when government-controlled schools don't work. So, and it's a problem because many people are paying taxes to fund those government-controlled schools, but they can't use them. So I'm constantly telling people, you got to homeschool, or you got to start a school, or you got to find, you've got to find a private school. And now more and more people are starting schools and finding private schools and or creating private schools, and it's creating more options. But it's no longer safe to be in a government-controlled school, and it's no longer safe to be in a school that has heavy use of invasive technology. So be very, very careful if you're putting your kids in a school, that you don't put your kids into an operation that's giving them, giving Spectre complete access to your children. Another piece of advice, and I use this, I mentioned this in the risk management, do not give your kids smartphones. I mean, you are giving organized crime direct intimate access to do surveillance and basically communicate with your children 24/7 without your knowledge and without, in many cases, their conscious knowledge. So you need to understand that there are people who intend to steal your kids' minds, harvest them, brainwash them, and you're giving them complete access and paying for it. Don't do that. Do not give your children a smartphone. Big issue now is going to be college. If you pay for your child to go to a full four-year college and on to graduate school, you know, you can talk anywhere from a quarter to a half a million, even $1 million in expenditures, and they're going to get a lot of bad information and bad education. So one of the things I used to do is work out with young people, what's your learning plan? Talk about what their vision is for their life, what they want to do in life, what they need. So if they want to go to law school, yes, they are going to need a four-year degree. But then break down their education in terms of the investment of their time and your money or their money, depending on who's funding it, and look at the time and money investment vis-a-vis the actual skills you want to get, and make sure any investment of time and money is spent on something well worth it. I mean, let's say you want to learn to be really great at writing. Well, a bad writing course is going to be a complete waste of your time and not get you the money. A good writing course is going to be excellent. So you need to make sure down to the credit level and the class level that you are going to get your money's worth, you know, class by class, time by time. Okay, education. There's no such thing as a too high learning metabolism. Part of what's happening in this environment is the insiders have an exceptionally high learning metabolism and the outsiders have a slow learning metabolism. You want to up your game. So whether it's building an intelligence network, reading documentaries, taking courses, whether you call it, you know, intelligence or whether you call it education, no matter how you do it, you want to have the highest learning speed possible for you. And in building your map and the maps you need to navigate, as well as doing what you do in managing your assets. Another thing is organize. We have a piece in the Take Action wrap up that we did last year called Solaria Circles Taking Action at the Local Level. So whether it's in your network, like getting on Solaria Connect and finding people, or on subscriber input and finding people, or in your neighborhood or community, anything you can do to find like-minded people. And it's interesting, at the beginning of COVID, I kept hearing from people, I'm so alone, I can't find anybody. Everybody else is, you know, completely in the COVIDian cult and I feel so alone. And then what happens is they start to reach out. They go to particular conferences or events. They get on Solaria Connect, they meet, and they start to network and they come out of the closet and sort of are public about where they stand on things. And suddenly people start to show up and you come back 6 months, 12 months, 18 months later. And they're like, I love my life. I've got all these. It's what David Resnick said. He said, I have so many new, wonderful friends. Anyway, but you have to organize. You can't be alone. And I know it's tough, particularly if you wake up and you find yourself in a community, a business, a group, a family that are deeply in the cult. So you have to get out of the cult. So I know it can be difficult, but the more you organize to share intelligence and receive intelligence from other people and to, you know, and to go to work on doing some of the things you can do to improve your free and inspired life, I think the happier, you know, certainly the happier I am. Somebody said to me the other day, oh, you've gone through hell to, you know, to do what you do. And I'm so sorry. I said, don't be ridiculous. You know, I run around the world and I hang out with the most fabulous people all the time. And I can never complain about my life not being full of absolutely terrific and great people. And it's really funny. Anytime anybody joins the Solaria team after they're here for a month or two, they're like, I love the subscribers. It's so fabulous. So, you know, so I organized a business so I can only hang out with fabulous people. And I recommend it to you. Then finally, investing in people and philanthropy. I'm a people investor. If you look at the majority of money that I have invested since the litigation, including the money that came in on the settlement, I learned, and most Solaria Report subscribers have heard me tell this story many times, when the process tried to cut off all my access to income, I discovered that I had lent or given $250,000 to family and friends. And essentially, they got together and said, well, I guess she needs it back. And over the next 11 years, $250,000 was gifted or repaid back to me. And that was the money that kept me alive. If it hadn't been for that money, I would never have made it. And people would never have been as generous as they were if it hadn't been, you know, if they hadn't seen how generous I was. So when I was in the money, I was generous. When I was out of the money, they said, well, I guess we're going to help her. And one of the things I learned was the safest place for my money was out in the people bank. And I tell the story when I had a dreadful experience with a 401k. The IRS put it under audit, so I couldn't use it to finance the, you know, compliance. They were trying to put me in this corner and squeeze me. So I busted the 401k, paid $225,000 in taxes. And I said, I'm never doing that again because it's not my money. And when I settled the litigation, my CPA said, let's finance up the 401k. And I said, I'm putting that money back out on the people bank. And so I sent out very big and generous bonuses to all the people who had helped me stay alive and succeed. And I paid back some of the people who'd lent me money and, you know, and used the rest to start Solaria. But I learned, you know, I have a lot of confidence in the people bank. Now, And you do things to back or invest people, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You have to be prepared to have some things fail. But it's like any kind of investment. But I found it to be, in this environment, a particularly rich form of investment, because the question is, you know, when the you-know-what hits the you-know-what, who's going to have your back? So that's my question to you. Who's going to have your back? I had a wonderful friend of a subscriber who I was in New Hampshire, and he was talking about how nervous the stock market made him. And I said, okay, how many kids do you have? He said, 5. I said, do they all have mortgages? He said, yeah, they all have mortgages. I said, go to your kids and ask them if they will refinance out their mortgages. You'll lower their rate. You'll take a slightly smaller rate. You'll give them a benefit for doing this. But you'll refinance their mortgages, and then they just send you the mortgage payment every month. And so you have a steady income, and you don't have to worry about the equity market, because you can, you know. I said, do you trust your kids? Are your kids reliable? He said, absolutely. I said, okay. So I came back. I saw him a couple years later. The stock market had marched steadily up. And I said, well, how you doing? He said, well, I did. I refinanced all 5 kids out. And he said, you know, I missed the up in the stock market, but I sleep like a baby. So he was a people investor. He figured the kids were going to inherit the money anyway. So that kind of arrangement worked well. Again, there's some great links. One of the links we have is to the Take Action crowdfund, where we encourage people to donate to groups that are fighting for you. So if the World Economic Forum says it's 2030 and you have no assets, that means they're going to take your assets. So it started when I had a wonderful former client call me and said, I just sold a piece of real estate. What should I do with the money? I said, you should finance a litigation army. Because if you don't have an army to protect your assets, you're not going to have any. So I wouldn't worry about making another investment. I would worry about financing an army. And the Take Action crowdfund are some of our suggestions on the armies we try and help finance. We're big fans of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. You know, small farmers need an army. And if you want food, you want your farmers, your small farmers, to have an army. There's also a link to Gifting to the Children We Love, which is a book we found. We discovered in families there were people with money and there were people with time, but to help the kids, you needed time and money. But for some reason, the people with time and the people who weren't money were being shy and not getting together. So we wrote a book called Gifting to the Children We Love and started screaming at families saying, well, the people with money put up the money and the people with time put up the time. You know, shake it up and start helping the kids you love. Because if you want the kids to grow up to be wise and strong with the culture and values you want, you need to get in there and help them now. So investing in people, and part of that is philanthropy. Every quarter in the wrap-up, we have a donation page to show you all the donations we do a lot of little donations. It's just to, you know, I find a small donation to an important thing that we want to support. It's like a prayer saying, you know, it's our way of signaling we think this is a great thing to do and we're going to kick in. And our prayer for you is your crowdfund succeeds, or your enterprise succeeds, your endeavor succeeds. And we do the same, a lot of support of new media, because we think having a great new media is really important. So don't just invest in things that get you a financial return. Invest in people and philanthropy who are going to be there and protect your back in the war. You need your army, and you need your army spiritually, legally, and financially. And that's part of having a successful strategy. So those are our thoughts for part 2, Living Equity. And again, check out the script. It's got a wealth of links and it's a buffet. Don't feel obligated to go through everything. Just dive into the areas where you feel you need some inspiration or some energy. And of course, if you have questions, put them into Ask Catherine. I'm always delighted to hear your questions. So with that, that's the end of part 2. Let's go on to part 3, financial equity.